Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, back with you on the John Chuckery Show, hanging out in the Kia Studios. Final hour of the program is the start of the Brown Liquor. Don't turn that off just yet there, young fella. Start of the Brown Liquor Music Hour. Chuckery always gets the first request. In this case, of course, with Steven here. I have to take all the songs. Tomorrow, we are not on tomorrow, but tomorrow is LL Cool J's birthday. So this is by far my favorite LL Cool J song. This is one of the great dance songs of all time. Love this song. Just love the beat and the rhythm of the song. This is tremendous. It's the opposite of Baby Shark and all those songs that we gave you a little bit ago. This is tremendous out there. So 404-741-0929. Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. We do ask you to download the Odyssey app. You're not in the car as much as what you used to be, but you want to listen in on the station, the show. Odyssey app is the best way to do it. Put it on one of your devices. You can take your smartphone, your Alexa speakers. You can use your tablet, your turntable, your Coleco, your Swatch Watch, whatever your device is. Just download it on something to be able to catch us when you're on the go. Social media, you can find us at 99 The Game on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And as always, the best way to be a part of the show, give me a follow on my personal Twitter page, at JMCH316. That's your water cooler talking points, 3 to 6 months in advance of anybody else that is out there. As I said, we have young Steven on the other side of the glass producing the show. Jarvis has the night off, so, and again, I picked all the music for him so we don't, you know, mess anything up, because he would have, like, Luke Bryan and, well, what's that guy, Luke Combs, and
he's not bad.
I mean, he's
as
like,
far as modern day country goes.
Yeah, although all the guys and girls don't do country. They do today's version of country music.
That's true.
Yeah.
Also, with LL Cool J, can you give me his best acting role?
His best acting role?
Yes.
I don't know why. I mean, I'm not going to say SWAT. You got something in mind?
I do.
What?
Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those movies that's always
chef.
On
yeah.
TV. Yeah.
Right.
A fantastic movie.
Yeah, he's the chef. Yeah.
Where they're making genetically altered sharks or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
Great
and movie. And he talks about, like, the brothers are always going to get it in these kinds of movies and stuff. Yeah. And then that funny line by the guy that saves everybody, but he's like a 800-pound shark and you shoot me in the leg. So
yeah, he pins him to it when he's coming up. Spoiler alert.
Because I'm trying to think. I mean, I can't think of as many of his roles and stuff like that. I remember SWAT. Deep Blue Sea, I do remember, but I'm trying to think of any of his other. Like,
he's in that NCIS show, right?
Yeah, that's the TV show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. What city are they in?
Yeah, there's so many of them now. I feel like there's L.A. I think there's New Orleans.
Yeah, there's
going to
be
a bunch of them.
Yeah, there's going to be like NCIS, you know, Kennesaw coming soon. I mean, so, but anyway. Yeah, we'll have a couple of LL songs to mix in since it is his birthday tomorrow. So happy birthday to LL Cool J. All right, let's get to something, though, we call our college football roundup.
It's time for the college football roundup. A complete look at all the collegiate football action. Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Well, not really a surprise. All the Alabama stars starting to declare for the draft. So Jameson Williams, he declared for the draft. Evan Neal, Mathis declared for the draft. I'm trying to think of Neal. If Thibodeau and Hutchinson went 1-2, Neal could be 3. Hell, he could be number 1 overall. I would think that the Jaguars would have to draft Thibodeau number 1, wouldn't they? But Neal's going to be a top 5 pick, right? I mean, he was – before the Alabama offensive line was playing well and everybody getting some hype, Evan Neal was like the lone guy through the main part of the season. He was that dude and – again, another great tackle for Alabama, but he declared, and I would think he's going to be top 5. Williams would be interesting. He'll be the first wide receiver taken. Even with the injury, he's going to be the first wide receiver taken. I'll be curious to see where he falls because he's a top, I don't know, what, 10 to 15 type of player. He's got that kind of talent. He'll be the first wide receiver taken, right? I can't think of anybody else that would be, you know, ahead of him. I mean, Olave and the other kid, my brain went dead, the other kid from Ohio State. But I would think that Williams, especially with what he did, like the SEC championship game and stuff, and I don't think, and Michael Lombardi touched on this, I don't think he's going to be hurt in his draft status by the injury because nowadays these guys do come back so quickly. And I hate to say it this way, but I mean, like an ACL is just not the same as it was, say, 30, 40 years ago. Nowadays these guys come back from those things. In the old days, I mean, he's right. I mean, if you had like an ACL tear, you were pretty much done for your playing career in any sport. It didn't matter if it was football or baseball or basketball. You were pretty much done at that point. So all the Alabama guys starting to declare. It's that time of the year. We'll start to get all that. And we got, by the way, the Senior Bowl is not very far away. That's coming up right around the corner for guys to start getting their evaluations in. But we'll know. You know, I saw a couple guys already for Georgia into the portal and this, that, and the other. The thing I said with Georgia is I'm curious as to how many guys – the transfer portal I get, but Kirby has done a pretty good job of keeping kids staying in school and taking that extra year instead of bolting for the NFL. Really on the defensive side of the football, he's done a really good job of that. Be curious to see now that they have their national title if guys don't say, let me go pedal my wares in the NFL. I've done everything I can. I'm, you know, sort of like what they talk about with Stetson riding off in the sunset, except that these guys are riding off to go to the NFL and make themselves a whole bunch of money. So be curious to see how many guys we start to get from Georgia and some of these other schools. But, yeah, Mathis, Williams, Neal, everybody declaring for the NFL draft. Lane Kiffin, Ole Miss football coach, has hired his younger brother to be co-defensive coordinator. So Chris Kiffin, with a C, by the way, not a K, not K-R-I-S. It's actually C-R-I-C-H-R-I-S. Chris Kiffin will be the co-defensive coordinator. He will also coach linebackers. He will be co-coordinator with Chris Partridge. They will head up the defense overall. Partridge has been there the last 2 years, and he's also been the safeties coach. So Chris Kiffin, who knows? I mean, listen, we'll see what he's got. I can't tell you I know anything about Chris Kiffin, what he can do. DJ Durkin, by the way, went to Texas A&M as their defensive coordinator. He had been the DC the last couple of years at the Ole Miss. And, you know, if you want to call what Ole Miss plays is defense, because they didn't play a whole lot of defense at Ole Miss. So he was formerly the defensive line coach with the Browns. He and his brother worked together at Florida Atlantic. Chris was the DC on the Conference USA Championship team. He was at Southern Cal in 2010, where he was a defensive administrative assistant. So there you go. And it says, by the way, he was at Ole Miss from 2012 to 2016 with Hugh Freeze.
Yeah, he was one of the guys that got kind of jettisoned after the whole NCAA investigation began.
And yeah, when they brought Matt Luke to just calm everything down. What did he do for Ole Miss?
He was the recruiting coordinator and the defensive line coach at that time as well. He was seen as one of the best recruiters in the country at that time. Of course, us being at Ole Miss at that time, we all learned why. But now most of that stuff is legal now, so now you can bring him back with no issues.
So he helped find their bag man at Ole Miss, is what it was.
Yeah, his name popped up a few times in the NCAA letter of intent or whatever they call those things.
Yeah, shocking that would happen. So, listen, we'll see what he can do there. He's got the right last name. I mean, right now the Kiffin name isn't mud like it was a few years ago. You know, at least he's got the right name for it, so we'll see what he does. Look, Ole Miss can't be worse defensively, right? I mean, that was not a very good defensive football team by any stretch of the imagination, so it can't be much worse over there. Jim Harbaugh more likely than not to stay at Michigan. That according to a report by ESPN's Adam Schefter. He was on Mad Dog Sports Radio earlier today saying, quote, "Look, Jim Harbaugh is a tough guy to predict. I don't like absolutes at this time of the year because things change on a moment's notice. But if you're asking my opinion today, I would say he's more likely than not to stay unless he gets an offer from an NFL team he can't refuse. Now, is there going to be an NFL team out there that comes at him so hard with so much money, with such a good situation, that they're going to make it such that he can't say no and that could happen? It could, but I would say this to you, Adam. I was saying this about a month ago that there were all sorts of scuttlebutt. I think it came out last week. Some of the things I heard, I think he's further down the line than staying than he is leaving. I'm not surprised by all of that. I get the lure of the NFL, but it's also not like he hasn't been in the NFL before. And look, to me, this whole thing is about recouping the money that he lost at Michigan, right? Remember, he took the pay cut and everything. This, to me, is about recouping that. And if Michigan comes off the hip with a nice, big, fat offer and gets him his money back, I don't think he's going to leave. I don't. Because he knows this. If you go to the NFL, you know that in 1, 3, 4 years, you're fired. If you're not back in the Super Bowl or back near the top, you'll be fired in 3 or 4 years. Honestly, you know, I know people were like, the last couple of years, oh, Michigan may decide. Michigan's not going to move on from Jim Harbaugh. It's not like Jim Harbaugh hasn't had plenty of success there. It's not like they've been a middle-of-the-road type of team. They've played in Big Six games. They just went to the playoffs this year. He's had really good teams. Yeah, he didn't get over the hump against Ohio State. That's been his big bugaboo. Guess what? There's a lot of teams that don't get over Ohio State. A lot of teams, you know, that haven't been able to beat Ohio State on any consistent basis. So I agree. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think this is as much of a ploy by his agent to get his money back from Michigan, to get himself paid, which you would think that he would. There's some guys going to clean up. I mean, Kirby Smart's about to clean up. Kirby Smart's looking at 10 years and $100 million. I mean, he's about to clean up big time. And if he does, then what? Saban's going to get $1 more, right? Saban's going to get, you know, whatever. If Saban's not paid more, he's going to get a dollar more no matter what. But, no, I mean, Jim Harbaugh's a guy that I think he's going to stay at Michigan for a while. I get the lure of the NFL. But, again, you're going to, you know, not-so-good franchises, and if you don't turn around quick – I get the idea of why they would link him to the Bears. Of course, he played there and all that. Right? I think did they draft him or an Indianapolis draft him? I can't remember if Harbaugh was drafted by Chicago or if Indianapolis drafted Harbaugh. But obviously, he played in Chicago for the Bears. Yeah, it makes sense from that standpoint. But does he want to go back and get fired in 3 years? Ryan Day, the same way. Are you ready to leave Ohio State to go coach the Bears? Yeah, you get Justin Fields and all that kind of stuff. And Ryan Day hasn't coached in the NFL. So I can understand that. Maybe a little bit more. I'm just not buying the Jim Harbaugh of the NFL thing. And it doesn't seem like Adam Schefter is buying it either. Now, speaking of the Big Ten, it released its revised schedule for this coming season, for the 2022 football season. And they've added a couple of cross-divisional games. So Penn State is one of the – it said here, for to avoid an Illinois-Penn State matchup for a third consecutive season – the conference will instead have Penn State play Northwestern at home on October 1st, and Illinois will play Indiana on the road September 3rd. The Penn State game against Michigan bumped back to October 15th, and the home game against Ohio State pushed back 4 weeks to October 29th, which that's a fun weekend, right? I have not seen. That should be Georgia-Florida weekend too, right? Because Georgia-Florida is around Halloween. I don't think it's the first week in November that they're going to play it. I've not looked at the official dates or anything like that, but how about if you had a weekend of Penn State, Ohio State, and Georgia, Florida in the same weekend? That's not a bad weekend, not a bad Saturday of football. So it says here that Ohio State had its cross-divisional game against Wisconsin moved up to September 24th, and its game against Iowa pushed back to October 22nd. And then Iowa has a game against Minnesota pushed back and this, that, and the other. So they changing up some different football things. This goes back to the COVID-19 situation from 2020 when, remember, they just played 8 conference games that year. And so they're trying to not just get all the same matchups, trying to change some things around in the Big Ten from a cross-rival standpoint, from a standpoint of, you know, East versus West or whatever. What is it? What's the Big Ten? The Big Ten's North and South or something like that, but trying to get some of those games moved around so that you don't get the same matchups, and because of COVID, you know, 19 and 2020, you didn't have out-of-conference games and things like that for out of all of it. Look, the Big Ten is going to be Ohio State 1, you know, in the conference. Michigan will be probably the second-highest-ranked team out there. They've got their quarterback back. They've got some other pieces back. Yeah, they lose their 2 big-time pass rushers, but they have a lot still on their front 7 that's going to be coming back. So Michigan will be fine. I don't think they're going to be a playoff team next year, but nobody thought they'd be a playoff team this year. But Ohio State is clearly the class of the Big Ten. I mean, Ohio State's going to have the best offense in the country coming back next year. Look at that personnel with Stroud and Henderson and my brain just went dead. Njigba and Marvin Harrison's kid and everybody that they've got coming back on that offensive group. And they've recruited, obviously, really well. The problem has been, you know, not on the offensive side, it's the defensive side. And Ohio State made some announcement today about changing up their defensive personnel. They've got to do a better job of coaching their defense. They changed up some of their defense coordinator coaches on the defensive side of the football. They're not happy with the way that they've recruited on that side of the football. So changing up coaching, hoping to try to catch, you know, something better than what it's been last year. And certainly even their defensive front let them down, which was so good coming into the season. So we'll see what happens there. When we get back, we'll get into the Cam Reddish situation. Is no longer a Hawk. Now he's a Nick. What went wrong? Where do we go from here? Chuck, we're hanging out in the Kia Studios on Sports Radio 99 The Game, Odyssey.com app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, back with you on the John Chuckery Show. Brown Liquor Music Hour rolling right along. Have a little fun with some LL Cool J since it's his birthday tomorrow. 404-741-0929. Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Yeah, I'm that type of guy. Head to the top of the hour in the JR Sports Brief. We got young Steven producing the show behind the glass for you here this evening. Well, obviously, the big story that broke today was the trade of Cam Reddish as he goes to the New York Knickerbockers. They will be here on Saturday night. Hawks will be in action tomorrow night in Miami. We'll have all that right here for you on the Home of the Hawks. Pre-game at 7:30 tip. And then Saturday, the Knicks will be up here in Atlanta. 7 o'clock pregame, 7:30 tip for that. Steve Holman and Mike Connie will have the call for all of that. As the New York Knicks will have Cam Reddish, I would assume that he will be healthy, ready to go, and looking to put up a big number. You know, we got reports today. Chris Kirshner was kind of reporting. One of his coworkers was also reporting the idea that Cam Reddish had been wanted to be out of Atlanta for a little while or this, that, and the other. You know, look, people ask me on my Twitter and stuff, you know, why was he moved or this, that, and the other? And I think you have to separate some of the perception from the reality of it. And I know I'm going to sound like a hater, but I'm just giving you the facts out of all of it. You know, we talked a lot about Cam Reddish in the playoffs last year and what kind of impact he had. And go back to, you know, his big game in the playoffs, that game against Milwaukee with the 20-some-odd points and this, that, and the other, and the 7 threes or whatever like that. Hawks lost that game by 11. Lost that game by 11 points. Now, fast forward to this year. He had his first 30-some, 34, 35, whatever, point performance in the NBA. Hawks lost that game. Then not long after that, he followed up with his second-best performance ever scoring-wise in a game, 30-some-odd points. Hawks lost that game. You know, there's been a lot of inconsistent play. He's had trouble staying healthy and not being injured. Remember, he's literally like the only guy on their roster that hasn't had COVID. It's not as though he got COVID. He's missed games because of injury and things like that. So imagine if he had COVID with all that, how many games he would have missed already this year. I think the Hawks realistically looked and said, we have to start thinking about guys we can sign long-term and guys that we can't sign long-term. How do we get better? Where can we get some more need? If we can't pay everybody, let's use some of those assets now. Now, one of the parts of the story that's coming out is that the Hawks waited until they got the deal that they wanted. They wanted a first-round pick, and ideally they wanted a pick that was close to the number 10 spot where they picked Cam Reddish before. Now, they didn't get that. They got, whatever it was, 25 or whatever. It's not, well, we don't know yet. It's not a lottery protected pick that they got, which is from the Knicks through Charlotte. So it's not even the Knicks pick. It's Charlotte's pick that the Knicks have acquired. So the Hawks now have two first-round draft picks, which probably will mean that they will look to package something and try to bring somebody in here to help them win. Because right now, that's all that matters. If you're an Atlanta Hawks fan, all you should care about is wins. I don't care how they get there. I don't care if they have to score 165 points to win in the NBA, then you better be ready to score 165 points. And if they have to hold teams to 17 points in a game, you better be ready to hold teams to 17 points. My point is you have to accumulate wins now. Now you're in the business of at 17-23, and obviously tomorrow night will be the halfway point for the Atlanta Hawks. You've got to start accumulating some wins. And you're going to have to probably tweak your roster in such a way to get some guys in here that, honestly, that it's about winning games. You know, you can't afford guys that can give you some numbers, but at the end of the day, you don't win enough games. And I think that's the other thing about Cam Reddish, too, is just defensively, I mean, let's be honest. Look at his metrics. Defensively, he's not as good as what people want to tell you and want you to believe. That's reputation. But you have to also look and say, what has changed about from what Mike Krzyzewski said about him? Cam Reddish is a massively talented player, no doubt about it. But just like a Duke, it just kind of hasn't worked out here. And so if he's not happy and the organization doesn't see, then you move on from all of it. And you take that first-round draft pick and you trade it for, you know, somebody to come in and help you out. Whatever moves that they make, they've got to win. Because Tony Ressler is not ready to give up on the season. I promise you, if you think that this team is ready to go into you know, tank mode and all that kind of stuff. Well, the owner doesn't think that. You as a fan, you know, we get to whatever, February, and let's say this team is 6 or 8 games still under 500. Like, well, they just need to start tanking. Well, the owner ain't thinking start tanking. The owner's got all kinds of money tied up. He's got all kinds of money in payroll and players. Just gave Kevin Herter a bunch of money. Just gave Trey Young a bunch of money. Just gave John Collins a bunch of money. He ain't in the business of tanking. And they re-signed Lou Williams and all this stuff. He ain't in the business of tanking. He wants some return on his investment. This was supposed to be a season to go make a run toward the NBA Finals, where they were 2 games short of playing for the world championship in the NBA last year. He's not thinking about tanking or anything like that. Now, luckily in the East, your season isn't over, even at 17-23. And this is a move that had been rumored and suspected for a while. We heard reports in the summertime. You know, right after the season ended, that there were rumors about, well, would Cam Reddish be back next year? So am I surprised that they traded him? No. Am I surprised that they got a first-round pick out of him? A little bit. You know, but the Knicks had one to play with. Again, that's Charlotte's pick that they have. It's not their draft pick. It's Charlotte's pick. And it is lottery protected. So, you know, it's not going to be a top, you know, top-tier pick. It's not going to be a top 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 type of pick. But I think they looked at it and said, I think the Knicks, you know, who are kind of in win-now mode as well, coming off their, you know, playoff, you know, first time in the playoffs in a while, and they felt good about themselves, and they tied the Hawks for the fourth most wins in the Eastern Conference during the regular season because of the head-to-head matchup. They had the home court advantage, so that allowed them to, you know, start the series in Madison Square Garden. So I think they're looking at it and saying, okay, we need another playmaker out here. But for whatever reason, it just didn't click here in Atlanta. So you got something back for it, and now you have to figure some things out. I am a little bit sketchy, or I should say maybe the word I'm looking for, trying to think of the word that I want to use. I'm a little bit suspicious when I hear reports when a guy leaves about, well, he didn't want to be here anyway, or he's been complaining for the last few months about being here. Okay. You know my theory on all that stuff. If he really didn't want to be here and he wasn't happy here and somebody had that story, then why weren't we getting stories about that on a regular basis? Why weren't we getting stories about that from multiples of people or whatever like that, that if that's the case? That's my thing, is that if you have a player that is not happy with an organization and doesn't want to be here and is expressing that, you don't hold that story until he's traded and then say, okay, now we'll print this story about, well, he didn't want to be here. Okay. I'm not telling you that there's not truth in it. I'm not telling you that he wasn't frustrated by his role on this team or what have you. I think it's, you know, partly just both sides of this equation saying, okay, we want to move on, but, you know, the Hawks basically saying, we're going to get what we want for it. We're not going to just give you up for free. We have to get something of value to us. In this case, a first-round draft pick. And there's been all kinds of names that have been rumored about the Hawks may be looking at. Harrison Barnes was a name that's been thrown out there. There's been other guys. Who is it? A Jaylen Brown of the Celtics, another guy that's been looked at. I don't think Travis Schlenk is done, though, like I said. I do think that there are more moves to be coming out of all of this because they've got to figure some things out to get better. And we'll find out how good Nate McMillan is. Can Nate McMillan turn this thing around? Because that's what he did last year, was take the Titanic and instead of hitting the iceberg with it, he turned the nose around or turned the nose away from the iceberg and guided them through a really good stretch of basketball. Well, he's got to do that this year. You know, he's got to do that this year as well. And I don't want to keep hearing about players' effort on defense or this and the other. If it's effort, then take guys out. Sit guys. You can't have all your star players come out and say, you know, it's effort, 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 which, you know, how do you quantify that? But if it's effort, 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 and you don't feel like you're getting it, sit guys. You're the coach. That's what you have the power to do. That's the one thing that your coach has the power is to be able to sit guys if needed. If you don't feel like guys are contributing what you need, sit them down or move them along through trades or releases or what have you. I understand you can't do that to everybody, but if you have to make some examples, then make some examples out of all of it. So I'll be curious to see because we are – and look, if you're going to make some moves at the deadline, now's the time to get all your ducks and chips in a row because some people are asking about, you know, why you traded, you know, Cam Reddish now, maybe not wait to the deadline when some teams start to get desperate. Because I think the Hawks want to make a move. And I think what they want to do is they want to – they don't want to try to make a move at the same time that the trade deadline's about ready to come and go. I think they want to have all their ducks in a row, have all their poker chips on the table that they want to maneuver around, and then make a deal from there. So we'll be interested to see what Travis Schlenk decides that he wants to do. And it'll be interesting to see if Cam Reddish plays himself into a pretty nice, hefty, long-term contract. If he can stay healthy and do some good things for the Knicks, can he get himself paid? I don't know what the next Knicks, cap situation is. I don't know what they've got money owed and things like that, but if he can work himself into a really good payday for him, good for him. And if he's not happy here, you know, there's an old saying about, you know, with your problem, if I can't fix the problem, I have to eliminate the problem. And if you don't think you can make Cam Reddish happy, then move him on and find a, you know, find a piece that fits in with what you want to do to make your next move from there. But the Hawks have got to figure some things out. Getting better defensively, whatever it's got to be. They have to get some things figured out because they have to start winning basketball games. You know, even if the Hawks win tomorrow night and they go 18-23 in the first half, that's not acceptable. That's 36 wins. That's not a playoff team. And when you look at their the Eastern Conference and, you know, you see Detroit and Orlando is like two of the three teams that are below them, and those are the dregs of the universe, that's frustrating. That's why I say Tony Ressler's not thinking quit or give up or the season's over or it's just not going to happen this year. No. He's putting all this money out, and look, he expects some results for all of it. He's going to put out all this kind of money and give out all these big contracts. Guys have to step up and perform. If it's an effort thing, then either figure out the effort or figure out how to sit on the bench. And that's where Nate's going to have his hands full is this second half. You know, hopefully we get everybody healthy and we're out of COVID protocols. You know, right now they don't have anybody in the health and safety protocol, so that's good. Now it's just getting everybody healthy. You know, DeAndre Hunter played, you know, so he's back now. Okay. You know, your pieces are coming together. Now you got to figure out a way to string some wins because that third quarter of that game last night was dreadful. It was dreadful to watch. And I heard Andy and Randy earlier today, they were asking the question about if you thought you wanted to move on from him, why didn't you trade him, you know, before the season started? Well, I think it's twofold. One is I don't think the right deal was in place. I think if the right deal was in place, they would have moved him. But more importantly is they came into this season with aspirations of being the NBA champion. Now, whether that was realistic or not doesn't really matter. Their expectation was we were two games away from playing for an NBA final. We expect to be back there. We're a year better, year more experienced, and we got all of our guys in place and keeping everybody together. So rather than trade and start changing rosters around, they're looking to try to get back to the Eastern Conference Finals and win this thing and get to the NBA Finals. That's why they didn't trade him. If they knew then what they know now, maybe they would have traded him. But the idea was keep him here. We get him healthy. We get him back. You know, even though he didn't play in summer league and things like that, you know, where he probably could have helped himself a little bit. We'll get him back, get him healthy, get him ready to go. And it just kind of hasn't worked out. And the Hawks are not a very good basketball team right now. And that's not all his fault. I mean, it's not like he's, you know, he's so bad that he's hurting the team, but they're just not winning enough games. And they got to get their star players starting to act like stars and start winning them some games. And I know Trey's doing everything he can. I mean, had the 56 points and they still lost, right? 56 was against Chicago when he had the 56 and they still lost. Your superstar goes for 56. You're supposed to win those games. Sorry. You know, if LeBron goes off for 56, way more times than not, he's supposed to win that game. Same thing with Trey. He goes for 56 way more times than not. You got to win that kind of game when you get that kind of performance out of your guy. So the Hawks are going to be interesting to see because there's a lot of good sports capital right now, a lot of good sports will in the town. Braves World Series champion, Georgia coming off a national championship. You know, there's a lot of goodwill right now. You know, Atlanta United made the playoffs again. So they got themselves, you know, back on track. Maybe not the ultimate result, but they certainly at least got themselves back on track after what was a miserable 2020. They got back in the playoffs. And obviously we had the great Hawks run, you know, playoff run from last year. Okay, well, everybody wants you back in the playoffs. And I don't know what Travis has in mind. If he's thinking that, okay, let me get a couple of role players that can come in and contribute and play a specific role, sort of like some of the guys that were on the squad last year, or if he's thinking about going out and get himself a legitimate, say, two or three type of piece. We'll see. We'll see what happens out of all of it. All right, one more segment to go. We're headed to the top of the hour in the JR Sports Brief. Chuck Reed here hanging out in the Keys Studios. Sports right now to the game, Odyssey.com app. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Back with you on the John Chuck Reed Show. Brown Liquor Music Hour rolling right along. That's the way love at the top of the hour. JR Sports Brief coming up next. 404-741-0929. Solomon Brothers Diamond Text on to be a part of the show. Odyssey app site, catch on the go. Social media, 92.9 The Game. At JMCH316. On the Twitter machine. Don't forget, Saturday, it will be myself, Carl Dukes, and Mike Bell. We will be out in Athens for the parade. 10 to 3, we will be out there. Parade starts at noon. It's going to be like noon to 12:30 will be the parade, and then they're going to do the dog walk, and then they're going to go to Sanford Stadium, and they'll have an event there. I think the tickets are already they're not on sale. The tickets are available to season ticket holders and students, right? And then I would guess tomorrow, with it being Friday, that we'll start to get some release of the other tickets. They'll all be free, but I'm sure there'll be people like with the Braves that'll be selling all that. I'm going to be curious to see how many people come to this parade. I'm being serious. Will there be like over 100,000 people? You think, Steven, that there'll be over 100,000 people in Athens for the parade and the ceremony and everything?
Total, yes. I think in Athens that day, I think you'll have at least 100,000 people travel there. Whether or not they all line the streets or go into the stadium, I think that's another question. But I think a lot of people will just want to be around that atmosphere.
I think a free event inside the stadium, I think they'll put over 100,000 in there. I mean, I don't know if they're going to like have anybody that is allowed on the field and this, that, and the other, or how the setup is going to be or whatever like that, but they'll fill that stadium and more. It'll be standing room. I think it'll be standing room. Man, this, you know, say what you will about the pros, right? I mean, the Braves are ingrained in such a part of the fabric and tradition of Atlanta, but when it's your college football team and you haven't, when it's a college football program and you haven't done this in 41 years and you have an entire generation of fan base that doesn't know what a national title is. You know, I wasn't here in 19, you know, for 80, 81. I remember Herschel's run. The game I remember most in Herschel's career was his last game against Penn State, right? 2 years after the national title. And that wasn't Buck quarterback. That was John Latzinger, the quarterback. But I remember that because I wasn't a Penn State fan, but Todd Blackledge was from my hometown. He went to North Canton Hoover High School and was from my hometown. So I always watched a lot of Penn State because I liked Todd Blackledge. He was one of my favorite, you know, college players because he was from my hometown. So always watched and rooted for him. But I do remember because the Sugar Bowl with Pitt, I think, was an early game. It wasn't a night game, I don't believe, if I remember. I think that was a game earlier in the day because they didn't know for sure that they would get voted. Remember, back then it was about the media vote, right? The AP and UPI and all that stuff was the media vote. I don't think they knew if they for sure were going to get the number one ranking out of all of it, even though they were undefeated and they just beat Pitt and all that. I don't think they knew for sure that they were the national champions at that moment until the polls came out. But I remember those Georgia years, and that's, you know, I've said before, I think Herschel's the best college football player I've seen. Maybe for some older folks, there's some guys better, but I've said my top five of all time, five best guys I've seen in my lifetime: Herschel, Bo, Reggie Bush, Tim Tebow, and Brian Bosworth. It's the five best college football players I've seen on my list. And Herschel, you know, was a guy that as a Ute, I guess that had been, what, 9 or 10 years old, you know, it was like from 9 to 12 years old or 9 to 11 or whatever like that for Herschel's few years. And I've said before, I would love to sit down with Vince Dooley, no microphones, off the record, and just have a chat about what he thought about Herschel going to the USFL, bypassing the NFL and going to play for Donald Trump in New Jersey and play for the New Jersey Generals. I would be fascinated. Not what he said, and I don't even know what all he said about on microphone, but behind the scenes, was he a big supporter of the idea of Herschel? Look, I'm sure he wanted Herschel to come back for one more year, right? And you had a lot of guys that didn't leave early back in those days. It wasn't nearly as commonplace for guys to leave early. Not saying it didn't happen, but guys leaving early wasn't the same thing that it is, you know, in today's modern football world of, you know, guys are redshirt sophomores and they're already going to the NFL. You know, Michael Vick was a redshirt sophomore when he went to the NFL. He had been away from his high school for 3 years, but he was a redshirt sophomore when he came to the NFL. You know, guys back in Herschel's day didn't do that as often. I said, not that nobody did, but they just didn't do it as often as they do now when you talk about underclassmen headed to the NFL. So I'd love to ask Vince Dooley just his real legitimate thoughts about what went on in recruiting him and bringing him in and, you know, obviously playing for Trump for the Generals and the USFL. Did he think it made sense? Did he think that they could be around for a while? Because, you know, they were throwing a lot of money. They were trying to beat and compete with the NFL for top players. And if you've never seen the USFL, go look at all the guys that came from the USFL besides Herschel. You know, it was a combination of guys who were looking for a different opportunity, guys that were looking for one last grasp of playing. Like, for instance, Brian, you know, his quarterback was 1 year was Brian Sipe. Brian Sipe was a quarterback for the New Jersey Generals, and I think Flutie was the quarterback the second year for New Jersey. But Brian Sipe, who was by and large out of the league at that point, but was the MVP of the NFL in 1980. Now, the year Herschel's won the national title, or, you know, going into 81, Brian Sipe was the MVP of the NFL in 1980. He was a 4,000-yard, 30-touchdown quarterback for the Browns. That's the year that they lost to Oakland, and the Raiders became the first that won the AFC title game. It was a divisional game, but that was the year the Raiders became the first wild-card team to make the Super Bowl, and they would go on to beat Philadelphia. But Brian Sipe was his quarterback, who was, by and large, out of the league.
That was Red Wright 88 for the Browns, wasn't it?
Yeah, thanks. Ugh. Appreciate that, yeah.
Are you a Browns fan?
I mean, I'm not a Browns fan, but I grew up with all that.
Okay.
My dad was diehard Browns fan. My grandfather was diehard Browns fan. So, I mean, I grew up in Canton, Ohio, so they were all diehard Browns fans.
That's right.
Yeah, Red Wright 88.
Awful.
Yeah.
We talked about this last week, I think. I was born up in Ohio. Mm-hmm. My grandfather, you know, he was there for all those moments and stuff. So I've lived that heartbreak through him. So,
do you know what Super Bowl winning coach played for the Browns on that team?
Oof, I do not.
Oh my God, my brain just went dead. The Steelers coach that's on the NFL CBS.
Bill Cowher.
Yeah, Bill Cowher played on that team. He was a safety on that team. I actually have a team photo because they were called the Cardiac Kids. Was that team? That was Sam Artigliano, who would go on to coach Liberty. But I have a team photo that is signed by Don Cockcroft is one of the guys. That's by the way, that's why they didn't kick the field goal down there, you know, right? Like, the reason you have Red Wright 88, that play, is because Cockcroft had a broken leg kicking in that game. He missed an extra point and two field goals in that game. And the weather was bad and they knew Cockcroft couldn't kick. So they decided to push it and go for it, and Red Wright 88 happens. But so back to Herschel in the USFL. But Brian Sipe was one of the quarterbacks that he played for in New Jersey. That league has always been fascinating to me. But I would love to talk to Vince about what really went on with all of that, like the recruitment. He had to be shaking his head to think about the idea of Herschel playing for a non-NFL team. Forget just leaving early, but playing for a non-NFL team. He could not have been. I'm sure he's probably had on the record stuff, but I'm talking about off the record, no microphones. Let me sit you down and get the Wonder Woman lasso of truth around you and see what happened with all of it. So, but we'll be out there Saturday. I think it's gonna be a great crowd. It's gonna be a lot of fun. Dukes and Bell and myself, 10 to 3 on Saturday. We're gonna be at Grindhouse right there on Lumpkin. So we're gonna be right there in the heart of it. Also, come by and say hey yo, and hang out with us for the parade. All right, when we get back, we'll wrap things up with a love TKO. Head to the top of the hour in JR Sports Brief. Chuck, we're hanging out in the Keys Studios. Sports Radio 9 of the Game, Odyssey.com app. Sports Radio 92.9 of the Game. We're wrapping things up on the John Chuckery Show. Got a text, by the way, as we do the love TKO and get ready for JR Sports Brief. Texter says that all the seats are gone. They closed out the ticket requests, and now it says, sorry, the celebration is at full capacity. We'll see what happens. Before we get out of here, though, let me let you listen to what is the greatest opening lyric in all of music history.
My years, I guess I shed some tears.
So I guess if you need a ticket, go to eBay because there's probably some on sale there. They did the same thing to the Braves. They put them on sale. Although there's if the thing is at full capacity, which I'm assuming they have a full stadium, I would think, right? I would think that they'll use the whole stadium. So there should be 90-some thousand to 100,000 people, you know, for all of it. I would think so. I'll be curious to see if they sell everything off or if somebody puts it on eBay or whatever like that and sells off their ticket or whatever like that. So, and I'll be curious, you know, see what Lumpkin Street looks like for the parade. You would think that there'll be a lot going on through there and, you know, should be a raucous crowd. So myself, Dukes and Bell, 10 to 3 on Saturday in Athens. We'll be at Grindhouse. Grindhouse is right on Lumpkin Street, by the way. I think it's literally a 1 mile walk from Grindhouse down Lumpkin Street to Sanford Stadium. I think we measured it and timed it and everything like that. So it's a 1 mile walk out of all of it. So, and if you want something to eat, Grindhouse is a great place to do it. They got a great open area that you can, on the top there where we are, you can look right out and see everything going on. So always a good time. All right, we'll be out there on Saturday, Hawks basketball tomorrow night. We got to get out of here. For Steven, it's Chuck Reed. We'll see you. Bye.